Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Only at True North stores. New True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The Red Sox front office report brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, perfecting the art of fresh, and by findmassmoney.gov. And it is the chief baseball officer of the Boston Red Sox, Craig Breslow, who joins us this week. Hey, Craig, good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. Nice to get on the right side of things with the walk-off win yesterday.
It was. It felt like we've seen that game played, 25 times this season, and unfortunately we've been on the wrong end of it too many times. So, I don't want to paper over some of the other problems that we all saw yesterday, but anytime you have a chance to win a major league game, you need to take advantage of that.
Teams generally have an identity. And so I wanted to ask you this morning, what would you say this team does well?
Yeah, I think we're struggling with that exact question. I can tell you what we came out of spring training wanting to do well. We thought we had a deep lineup that was gonna hit the ball out of the park, but we were gonna be able to compete in in two strike counts and push runs aboard. We're gonna play clean defense. We were very, very deliberate in trying to improve our defense. Especially on the infield, we knew we had a good defensive outfield, and we thought we were going to pitch, and we thought that starting pitching was going to be a real strength of this team. I think we've seen it in glimpses, but we haven't gotten the consistent pitching that we had all hoped for.
I mean, are you basically just like flummoxed? I mean, this team was 500 last year and added Crochet and Bregman and a legit closer, and are somehow currently much worse.
Yeah, and we are constantly asking questions around what we need to do, what we can do better, how we create an identity to this team. For every starting pitcher that has shown improvement this year, and Crochet obviously leads that list, there are some guys that have been inconsistent and struggled. And, Bregman, before he got hurt, was everything we could have asked. Abreu got off to a really hot start. Raffy has been, productive in the middle of the lineup as we had expected, but then they're losing Tristan for the season, and guys that haven't really found their stride yet have also plagued us. So I feel like for every opportunity to say this guy's giving us a little bit more than we thought, unfortunately there's someone so far whose performance has been inconsistent.
Craig, when you look at where you are in this situation, you know, you could potentially be out of it by the All-Star break. Cora says he doesn't know what to do or how to change things. Is there a possibility, with everything being on the table, that you guys might make a managerial change if things don't get better?
We're always going to be anchored to what is best for the team, and we have a lot of confidence in Alex as the leader of this group. He's won in Boston as a player. He's won in Boston as a manager. We have conversations daily about everything that we can do to get us back on track. That's where our focus is, and that's where it will remain.
Do you have full confidence that he has what it takes to turn this season around?
I do. And when a team is struggling like we are and is falling short of the lofty expectations that we had set for ourselves, that fans had set for us, you know, I think we all feel a sense of responsibility and accountability, but we've got to figure this out. And that's where we're spending all of our time right now.
Do you have accountability to maybe reevaluate the analytics you're using? Maybe it's not working in the way that you had hoped. Have you, especially with Driveline, the offense, any, you know, anything about what you have done that you feel like the front office needs to change in terms of the information you're having Cora synthesize in game?
Constantly. You know, I think we are and have to be constantly asking the same questions about our tools and models and information and philosophies. And a real challenge is trying to understand whether you are not executing the plan that you have in place successfully or you have the wrong plan. But I don't think, given what is happening on the field, any of us is in a position to say that we've got everything figured out. And that is true on the development side. It's true with our big league team.
Curtis brought up the Driveline approach to player development. With this team leading the league in strikeouts with runners in scoring position, is it time to reassess that and flip the switch there?
Well, like I said, we're constantly reassessing. But if I were to, you know, to say to you, well, what is the Driveline approach, and you know, what part of that is try to, you know, ensure that with two strikes you're not putting the ball in play, especially with runners in scoring position? Like, what would be the answer to that? I think there's probably a mischaracterization around, you know, what exactly that means. So would love, you know, kind of in your mind, what does that mean?
I'm glad you're here to clear it up. I mean, I think if there's a misperception, it exists because you've intentionally gone out and hired everybody from the organization. And so we assume that that's approach when it comes to the hitting development of young players. If it's not, correct me.
Well, I guess what I'm asking is, you know, this approach is spoken about like it's the boogeyman. But if I were to say, you know, the approach that we have to teaching offense is to say, hey, we've got to start with making great swing decisions, right? We've got to understand the pitches that we need to swing at. When we swing at them, we need to put them in play. And when we put them in play, we want to hit the ball hard enough that it matters. And when we get to two strikes, we need to compete like all hell to put the ball in play, especially when we have runners in scoring position. Is that something that you would say sounds like, you know, kind of we've got the wrong approach here, or misunderstanding, you know, around what's important? I think we need our hitters to be extremely competitive in the box. We also need them to understand, you know, what type of balls in play tend to produce runs. And that's the approach that we've got.
Craig, if we could go back and look at pitching from Tuesday, taking Chapman out after eight pitches, what was the reason behind that?
We're trying to make sure that we're monitoring our reliever workloads, and obviously our bullpen they've been ridden pretty hard, you know, over the last couple of weeks as the starting pitching hasn't consistently pitched deep into games. And, you know, Chapman is a guy who hasn't gone back out for a second inning, you know, in quite some time, and we want to make sure that we have him fresh and available to help us as win as many games as we can this year.
Craig, have you reevaluated the approach in terms of whether it's workload for Crochet or in-game strategy, considering you're now 30-34 and the season could spiral? You know, so do you have to reevaluate just the day-to-day approach because of where you find yourself in the standings?
I think we do. And you know, I think we want to balance the information that we have available to us each day that could affect that night's game with keeping one eye at least on the longer term. And we saw with Crochet, obviously he had the shortened start against New York based on some information that we had available to us. And the other side of that was being able to push him in a game against Atlanta deeper than he had previously. And that's the balance. I think it's imperfect, and all of these decisions, they warrant questioning. But whether it's me or Alex or anybody else, we're making the best decisions that we can with the information that we have in front of us.
Craig, a little, help or insight? Dial up the suicide squeeze, especially when you got speedsters on third base. Maybe you bring that. Maybe you bring that back. But the question
that's from an all city catcher. By
yeah,
the way.
All city catcher
Jermaine Wiggins
puts a lot of pressure on the pitcher and catcher, especially with your speedsters. And you guys have a lot of speed.
Wiggy was great at blocking the plate, if you know what I mean.
But the one question I have as a former player who's been on teams that weren't very good. How do you make sure that these guys aren't mentally checking out because they see there's really no light at the end of the tunnel, or that light is starting to fade when you're talking about making the postseason?
Yeah, there's a certain level of pride and competitiveness that anybody who plays for the Red Sox and puts the Red Sox jersey on to hold. And that pride needs to prevent anyone from giving up, from, you know, kind of throwing in the towel on a season that in reality is still early, not early enough that we should be making excuses or think that things are going to turn around without, you know, kind of taking consequential steps to make sure that happens. But to play in the major leagues is a privilege. To put on this uniform is a privilege. And we need to hold our players accountable. They need to hold us accountable, and they need to hold each other accountable to make sure that doesn't happen.
Nesson removed the footage, so I can't watch it and figure it out. Just from your perspective, what happened yesterday with Jose Flores and Tyler Anderson?
Yeah, that's a situation where when emotions are running high and there's probably frustration boiling over, that adults kind of got into a heated conversation. I think best probably to leave it at that and know that both sides have moved on.
Why was the video removed on social media, or do you not know?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't have much insight or control over that.
When it comes to videos online, there were videos of Devers taking grounders at shortstop. We were all kind of scratching our head about that. Do you know why he was doing that?
So he's taken ground balls typically at third once a week, a couple times a week, just to get out there and be around the team and keep moving. Why he chose to move over a little bit to shortstop, I'm not totally sure, but I would not read too much into that.
Alex Cora said last week, I don't know the exact day, that, quote, Devers is not having it, unquote, when it comes to playing the field. How frustrating has this been for you, given the injuries that have built up and his apparent lack of a desire to try and jump in?
Yeah, there's frustration over a lot of things, most notably just not winning enough games and trying to do everything that we possibly can to put the team in a position to win more games. These decisions they're never simple, and the conversations are ongoing. And I understand that we're dealing with humans and all of the things that come along with that, but we'll continue to have conversations, and make sure that those are ongoing, because again, any time we have a chance to do something that we think helps the team, I just have to remain anchored to that.
But does it frustrate you that he doesn't want to do something that would help the team?
I think best to keep that opinion to myself and you know, in conversation between Rafi and me, or you know, Rafi and the team. And probably instead would shift the focus to the fact that Rafi is finding a way to contribute to this team, right? He's doing it by hitting in the middle of the order. But you know, if there's an opportunity to help this team in other ways, you know, I'm going to remain anchored to trying to push that.
Mandatory Roman Anthony question of the week. When?
Yeah. And it's a very fair question to ask. You know, the decision-making criteria haven't really changed, which is, you know, when is it best for Roman? When is it best for the team? And I understand that we're not winning as many games as we should be. And, you know, at times the lineup is struggling. But also we need to make sure that there is a very clear runway for Roman to come up and contribute. And we have to balance what that looks like with the number of moving pieces required to get us there.
Craig, it seems like that you and Cora are kind of on the same page to a certain extent, and that's most, you know, GMs and head coaches. But at the end of the day, there has to be a final decision maker when you guys don't see eye to eye. Is that you or is that Cora when it comes to bringing guys up or maybe guys playing a certain position? Who's the final decision maker?
Yeah, Alex and I have really productive conversations about these things all of the time. Ultimately, as it relates to transactions and you know, who the 26 guys are on our roster, you know, the final decision making authority lies with me. But I feel like if I'm doing this job well, decisions are not made because I say so, but because we have passionate debates and conversations around what's best for the team, and then we pick a direction and we all commit to it.
All right, Craig, thank you as always for taking the time. We'll talk to you again soon.
For sure, thank you.
All right, that is Craig Breslow.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Only at True North stores. New True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
Jones and Keith, WEEI. If you're here for the grab bag, check out the Audacy app, AUDACY. Get it on your phone, free, easy. Take it with you wherever you go.
Grab bag!
Thank you. We did the grab bag at 1 so we could make room for Tom E. Curran on a Tom E. Tuesday here on WEEI. Tom E. Curran, how are we doing this week?
Tremendous. Thank you guys for holding on.
All good.
Well, we want your intel from yesterday from Patriots OTAs. We've been playing a bunch of clips from the Patriots Talk podcast. You and Phil Perry, you seem to be pretty impressed by Steph Diggs, not only his presence physically being there, but how he looked on the field. Can the Patriots depend on Steph Diggs?
Hey, see, why do you always like leapfrog to something like that?
Well, I can only go
with what I see on June 2nd.
I already know what you. I know you like. You feel good. You're optimistic. You feel good about it. We're playing some clips.
Yeah,
I'm curious.
I don't know what he's going to be doing in October, but right now, for where he's been, Jonesy, the fact that he had an ACL 7 months ago, and to watch him take rep after rep after rep at full speed, well, 80% speed. But even being in a 2-minute, catching passes, taking the drills, which were kind of competitive drills in which guys were really racing and cutting, I was astounded that he was in that good a shape to be able to compete at that level. So to me, I think you put it this way, you can depend on him to most likely, not a doctor, be ready, I would think, somewhere in training camp. And I would bet on opening day, given that it's 100 days away still.
Do you think they put any kind of pressure on him to be like, hey, we'd really like you there on Monday after he missed the last one? And, you know, even aside from all the stuff on the boat or whatever, but just that he wasn't there, do you think they kind of went to him? Or what is your impression of that?
I would have to think the two things were intertwined. You know, if Scott Zolak, who I trust, is intimating that there are concerns about his buy-in, and then you have the boat video last week, and then he's out there not just in attendance and on the side, but taking part even more than Jalen Polk was taking part. Maybe they had a conversation that was, can we show that we're all in here? Because we're not seeing it, or we want to see a little bit more. But to his credit, he was out there. He worked his ass off. He stood, you know, behind the offense, away from the wide receivers, but with the quarterbacks watching. He spent some time with Jalen Polk. I'm not trying to put a buff and shine on, hey, he's a model citizen and he's going to have everybody under his wing, but it certainly, had the previous weekend not happened, we would have been shooting off, you know, confetti guns.
We have a whole drawer full of those in the other room. When I saw Party City was going out of business, I stocked up. So that's good. That's a good way to think about
good.
That.
Oh, you're always in for a celebration.
That's true. That is me. So is it your understanding, Rap Sheet said he passed his physical. Florio seemed to question that today at Pro Football Talk. Is it your understanding he's cleared his physical and now he's due his first batch of money from the Pats?
I have not plumbed that conversation, because I'm clearing to partake in a limited basis in OTAs is different from clearing of, you know, being physically cleared to play in a regular season game. So I don't know who to believe on that. If both those guys are at loggerheads on that, I would presume that the physical to make sure that his ACL is completely ready to go would be coming later. I mean, otherwise he would be taking fully in part, including in the full speed 11-on-11. The stuff that he was taking part in was 11-on-11, three-quarter speed. He was running pretty hard, but it was not. He was off the field for the little more intense passing events.
Steph Diggs clearly very important to this team when you look at the other names in the receiver room right now. But one of those names is Efton Chisholm III. That we had brought him up to you maybe going a couple weeks back. Now we've seen him on the field a little bit more. What kind of legitimate shot does this guy have of maybe making this team?
I would say it's very legitimate. He was out there with the ones a fair amount yesterday, ahead of Baker, it seemed. Now, they might not be playing the exact same spot, but he was on the field with DeMario Douglas, too, and those are similarly shaped guys. He seems to get open, understand the nuances. They're running a lot of different personnel out there. He's involved in them, and he never drops the ball, period. He's just, his hands are glue, and he's constantly open. So to me, it's, unfortunately, stereotypically, it looks like Edelman did 12 or 13 years ago. So did Braxton Berrios, though.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's that kind of dependability that when you run this style offense, that's going to be a spot that's frequently open in that intermediate range, and he sits down nicely in that pocket, you know, just inside the linebackers or over the linebackers, and makes a lot of plays.
So the analogy I made earlier, and I haven't seen him as you have, so I don't even mean play style-wise, but I can see this being good and bad. N'Keal Harry and Jacoby Myers in the same camp. I remember saying at the time, boy, this Myers kid is standing out, which I guess is good for him, but a bad sign for N'Keal Harry, which I guess both were kind of true. Myers went on to be a really good player, a 1,000-yard receiver in the NFL, eventually in Vegas. So is Chisholm standing out a good thing for him and the receiver room, or does it say more about the lack of guys you can rely on in the receiver room? Do you understand what I'm trying to drive at?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, 100%. I get exactly what you're saying. You know, is it coming at the expense of who? Is he leapfrogging guys who should be, you know, blocking out an undrafted free agent? And I would say, yeah, in the case of Baker, Polk, again, I said it to you last week, he continues to look like, you know, a top-tier elite receiver when he's running on the other field. He just looks good. So I don't know. I said the same thing last year, once bitten, twice shy. He looks good. But if you had to say, okay, well, who will Efton Chisholm be on the team in place of if Booty continues to play okay, which he has, if Polk plays and transfers, Douglas will have his spot, Williams will have his spot, Diggs will have his spot. I would have to say that if Kendrick Bourne can be deemed expendable because some of these younger guys can play, then that would be a place I'd look. I'm leaving Baker out of the conversation because I think he is in an uphill swim right now, period. But you have to look at the whole room and say, all right, we can really only dress five. Who are we dressing? Chisholm might have, you know, special teams relevance as a returner. So I'd keep an eye, and I know that that Josh McDaniels loves Kendrick Bourne. He's gotten good production from him, but just, you know, handicapping where guys would possibly be on the cut line, I would say Kendrick Bourne could be if all these younger players continue to show maturity and to be where they're supposed to be when they're supposed to be there.
What, if anything, Tom, has stood out regarding Will Campbell? And does it matter yet at this point that he's one of seven first-round picks not to sign a contract?
Nothing has really stood out. He's out there all the time. And when you talk to guys, yesterday we talked to Nwenu, they all love the way he carries himself and the way he operates. So to me, he's where he's supposed to be. He's not getting dusted. May had a terrific day, which I'm sure we'll get to a little bit. But I think a lot of that was, you know, the offensive line was screening better than they were previously, because that's really all they're doing. But he looks good. And as for the contract, they're slotted, so there should be no drama.
Right.
There really should be no drama at some point, because there's only so much you can make. You know, does he want Drake May's contract from last year or something resembling it? I'm not sure how left tackles and quarterbacks are defined when you start divvying up the money, or if it's just a straight slot. I think position does, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think position can sometimes be a boost when those rookie contracts are done, maybe a little more guaranteed money or something like that.
Tom, you mentioned Drake May and the improvements. We started at OTAs a couple of weeks ago, four picks, panic in the streets. He was 9 of 17 last week. You were on EEI Afternoons. I believe you said something like, you know, the throws were inaccurate. It was like a shortstop skipping a throw. Yesterday had a much better day, 14 of 16 in competitive drills. And on top of that, it sounds like you were there, I wasn't. It sounds like he was testing the intermediate and deep part of the field more than he had. So what did you see out of Drake May yesterday?
He was just really accurate. Really accurate. Ball came out quickly. There was less time spent with guys buzzing the power on him, but he made an unbelievable throw to Kayshon Booty down the left sideline, just put it on a platter as he was in a dead out sprint running a corner, and then, you know, put it right where it's on his hands on the sidelines. And then another one on a wheel route to Ramondre Stevenson. He hit a lot of, we had a very good vantage point behind the offense on the hill, so you could see the windows opening up, and he showed great anticipation hitting guys as they opened up over the middle. So just really a good day. And to me, it just speaks to some of the stuff that McDaniels was talking about, that, you know, every play is a good play now because
the good ones are good because they're good, and the bad ones are, well, they're learning experiences. And I'm saying it kind of jokingly, but he learned and played better. They might be out there next week in minicamp, and he pees down his leg. I think that's probably what you're going to see from a second-year player frequently, but he just made throws yesterday where, you know, he's got the arm strength, but he just made a couple throws. You're like, yeah, I haven't seen a throw like that in a while. And Tom didn't really throw it that freaking hard. It didn't explode out of his hand like that either. So it's just a rare chance, and that's where you like appreciate the chance in the media to be at these things and have the vantage point to watch these guys throw. You're like, holy crap, what an athlete.
Well, speaking of what an athlete, I mean, do you think they're going to let him run and not, you know, run first or anything like that? But we were looking back on it. His second year in college, when Drake May was the most productive passing the ball, he also ran quite a bit. Last year, he had a really great, yards per carry. And if you kind of just add what he did last year, he should be maybe a top five quarterback in running. Is that something you think they'd be open to?
I'm curious to find out myself.
Yeah.
Because you should employ the ability that he has. It's why you drafted him number three, not because he was the greatest, most accurate pocket passer you've ever seen, but because of the array of skills that he has and the speed to get to the edge and the speed to be decisive and pick up 15 or 16, you know, on a third and 10 because he's so friggin' fast and decisive and big. So I'm sure that they're going to. Are they going to put him in harm's way with a whole bunch of read options where guys could take a free run at him because he's, in essence, a ball carrier, even if he hands off? I would say that probably isn't going to happen a ton. But until I see it, I don't know. And I think that McDaniels is interesting in the way he's talking right now, in the way he's inferring that he's open to a lot of new ideas, whether it's provided by his fellow coaches or things that he's gleaned in the college game and the pro game during the year off last year. So I don't think it's going to be a mimeograph fax, you know, carbon copy of what they've always done. I think he will tweak things to take advantage of May.
Okay, so I was actually just about to ask about that. I know you guys are very limited in what you can actually pass along formationally and in terms of plays they run and things like that. But I was just going to ask about that. Is the McDaniels offense actually going to look different than the last time we saw it and various stops in Vegas and everything else? You seem to think there will be some changes given what he experienced in college and everything else over the last year. I was just going to ask about that. And so that to me would be very promising if we're going to see some new stuff from Josh.
Yeah, and I think that he's open to it. I think the last thing that he would want to be accused of is being non-innovative and archaic. But he is also a very hard grader. And if he thinks that May will be exposed by his receivers not running at the right depth or not, you know, being available at the right times, and he has to say, you know what, now we have to dumb it down because this guy and this guy can't do it. Sorry, Drake, it's him, not you. Then I think that he would do that because he has a very low tolerance, as they all should, for idiocy. And I think that's something that Vrabel, to side note, Vrabel's making it very clear to them on a regular basis. We need to be able to take advantage of S football. And I'm not sure we can do that yet. And they had three false starts on a practice-ending sprints thing. Three guys left before the count, which was kind of funny the way they were doing it. They would get down before they did this 30-yard sprint, and they would have a quarterback count it out. And there were guys jumping. And Vrabel kind of made a point afterwards of, if you do stupid things, teams around the NFL will notice it and they'll take advantage of it. We can't have that. So right now I'm looking for guys who don't do stupid things, who take advantage of stupid things. So that's what I'm looking for, is basically the message he was sending.
Okay. He's Tom E. Curran. Joins us every Tuesday on a Tom E. Tuesday here on Jones and Keefe on WEEI. You can check him out, Tom E. Curran, on Twitter. Check him out all over NBC Sports Boston as well. Quick Slants, Early Edition, BST, et cetera, et cetera. Tom, we appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
All right, boys. Have a great week.
Thanks, Tom.
Tommy Curran joining us here on WEEI. He'll be on Thursdays as well on WEEI Afternoons.
WEEI Afternoons back here at Fenway Park, where we are joined by the Red Sox manager, Alex Cora, who is brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, the official supermarket of the Red Sox Radio Network, by Arbella, here for baseball fans, here for good, and by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when your drains don't flow. Alex, how are we doing today?
Doing good. How are you?
Good. And that's where I want to start, because I think we all felt a little momentum coming out of Atlanta. You win a series, and we tune in last night, and everybody's talking about how the pitching is set. Richard Fitt's going to extend him a little bit. We got Hunter Dobbins ready, and boom, right there, you're down 6-0. What is that like, that roller coaster of momentum? Is it hard for you as the face and voice of this team to kind of stay upbeat in those weird situations like that?
No, in that spot, you forget all that stuff that you said, and it's like, how are we going to get 27 outs?
Yeah.
Understanding that the bullpen has been used a lot the last 15 days, that we still have two more games in this series, and we still have 8 more innings to play.
Right.
So you balance everything too, because as you know, Fitz just came off the IL, and he made 40-something pitches. That's not great. Do we send him for one more inning to help get 3 outs and help everybody in the bullpen? We decided to go with Dobbins, and he did an amazing job. And then all of a sudden, winning the game, right? And it's tough. Then you think about it. You're like, oh, we beat Atlanta 2 out of 3. We get home. Let's get to a good start. It didn't go. So, we got Bayou tonight. We should be okay. I think the bullpen is in a better spot, and hopefully we win and give us a chance to win the series tomorrow.
Alex, just going into these games, your pitching coach, Andrew Bailey, do you guys talk strategy and plan out what you guys want to do before games? How's that process like with you and him?
Yeah, there's a lot of meetings. Jason meets with the catchers to go over hitters and the previous game. Andrew and the starter with the catchers and the game planning unit, they sit down to go over hitters. What's the attack plan? How are we going to do this? First time through the lineup, second time through the lineup, and hopefully third time through the lineup. I think at the end of the day, as you guys know, in sports, right, you can have the best game plan ever, but you have to execute, right? And yesterday we had the leadoff guy on a 1-2 count. We hang a slider. He's a homer. There was a good execute sinker inside. The guy, gets inside, hits a blooper. We walk a guy. We have Mike Trout on a 3-1 count. That's not always good. So execution is something that is very important. And you don't know what's going to happen every 5 days with that specific starter. Prepare, he is. But at the end, as you know, at 7:10, 7:05, you have to do your job.
Alex, you're coming off of that series win in Atlanta, which I know meant a lot to you as well, and you get back home and the fans are excited. You're playing a team that you're expected to or favored to beat. It's a beautiful night for baseball, and I'm sure all losses hurt, but does a loss like that last night where your team shows such heart and such compete all the way through, 8 innings of one-run baseball from your bullpen only to come up just a run short late like that, does that hurt a little bit more?
It's been hurting the whole season. It's, like I said a few days ago, we are where we are. And like Bill Parcell used to say, right, you are what your record shows, right? And we have lost 16 games, 16 one-run games, and it's one play, one pitch, one decision. Put the ball in play with man third, and you win the game. And this is our season right now. We have to be better. When you lose games by one, you look back and it's like one walk and one stolen base, and we have to pay attention to details, because it looks like this is who we are, right? We're going to play a lot of close games. So how are we going to start winning those is the most important thing. And the message is loud and clear. You have to play better defense. You have to run the bases better. You have to pitch better. We went to Milwaukee and they play excellent baseball for 3 days. We made a few mistakes and they took advantage of it. And look at them now. They have won 8 games in a row and they were struggling. So I think clean baseball is very important, and hopefully we can start doing that tonight.
I could give you rankings and percentages, but I'm just going to keep it very simple. Do you guys need to throw more fastballs?
I mean, we always talk about that. And first of all, do we have good fastballs, right? That's the most important thing. It's not always, okay, Mike Trout, let's throw fastballs to him because right now he just came out of the IL. He's late. If your fastball plays. And we got a lot of information. And, let's say I'm a starter. I know my repertoire. I know which one is my best pitch. I know which one is my worst pitch. Your worst pitch, it still can play in certain areas. So you have to recognize your first. The way it works, and Jason talks a lot about this, recognize yourself as a pitcher, then go over the hitter. And if it matches up, then you go to the weaknesses. If it doesn't match up, then stay with your strength. You know, yep. If your strength is fastballs and mine is fastballs, it's mano a mano. We have to go, right? And that's something that our guys, I think they have a pretty good idea who they are. Sometimes, you know, they execute pitches. And I know we spin the ball a lot. And with two strikes, the difference between a homer or a 0-2 take is where you throw that breaking ball. And we have to execute.
Speaking just and kind of just thinking about the younger players that you have, is it harder to ask them to change fielding positions or their place in the batting lineup? How do those two different things kind of factor in when you're coaching young guys?
Yeah, I think the defensive part of it has to be tough. I lived it. You know, I moved from short to second, go back to short when I was a rookie in the league. I was a good defender, but it was still a little bit tougher. The whole lineup part of it is something I'm very cautious about it, but obviously personnel-wise, this is where we're at. We don't have Casas. We don't have Alex. So we have to find a way to maximize the first five innings and then start thinking about matchups later on. There's a reason Marcelo sometimes is hitting fourth or fifth, you know, and when there's a righty on the mound, we bunch our lefties. We know that we have Ref at one point, maybe to hit for Willie. Now we got Romy that probably is going to hit for the middle infielder or the corner infielder. You mix and match. And we did it to KC at one point because he was hot, he's swinging the bat well, and now we have to downshift, right? Now he's hitting eighth, he's hitting ninth. Hopefully he can breathe a little bit and get that feeling again. But the lineup construction is something that we take a lot of pride because it's not only about the first six. We're trying to maximize that. But then you start, like, thinking ahead, okay, this is a lefty that they have. He might come in the seventh for Jaron and Rafi. Willie's behind them. We got traffic. It's Ref, and he has to face Ref Knight in that spot.
Alex, when a player of yours has his name mentioned potentially in trade rumors, like what made headlines a day or two ago that the Padres could potentially be interested in trying to pry Jaron Duran away from you guys, do you have to talk to the player? Do they come to you if they ever hear their names in the press like that? And what level of input do you have if management even comes to you about possible big moves like that?
Yeah, I mean, with the front office, I'm always in conversations, you know, not only in the present but the future too. As far as like the rumors and all that, I work in the industry. I was in Bristol for 5 years, and I always tell him this story about Jim Bowden. We were around the training deadline, and we have these shows talking about trades and all that. We're sitting in the green room, and Jim is like, "What do you think about this trade?" And it was like a blockbuster move, whatever. And like, "Where you got that from?" "No, I just made it up." I'm like, "You see?" So I tell the guys that don't listen, you know, don't pay attention to what's going on in social media and all that. Sometimes it's not real. Just keep playing baseball. That's the thing you can control. And, you know, they understand that part.
Red Sox manager Alex Cora here with us on WEEI Afternoons. I'm kind of proud of us. We've made it almost 10 minutes. We haven't mentioned Rafi Devers or first base. I feel like we're due. Okay. Ted, I'll leave first base to you. So you've been in the media. You know Boston. You know social media. Rafi Devers is seen taking ground balls.
At shortstop.
With an infielder's glove, not a first base mitt. So what should I read?
With a training glove. It was a training glove.
Okay, so what should I read into that?
That's part of his preparation. You know, Rafi hasn't been able to take grounders in a while, weather-related or traveling, all that stuff. And sometimes for him, you know, it's good to go out there and move his feet. So, you know, he's still our DH.
Romy comes back from being on the IL for 22 days, gets a couple ribbies last night. In a perfect world, is he your first baseman for the foreseeable future?
No. Now, with the way Toro has played, we'll mix and match. We'll look for certain matchups to maximize, understanding that if Romy doesn't play and there's a lefty in the middle of the game, we can use him. He can play third, he can play second, he can play first. So Where we at right now, roster-wise, we're going to mix and match, but he'll get a few starts at first base too.
All right, since we have passed the 10-minute mark, I guess I'm in the all clear as well to ask about the obvious. Any update on Roman Anthony, further discussions within the organization, and any shot we could see him, I don't know, maybe next week?
Roman is doing well. He's getting better. As of now, this is the roster that we have, and we're going to continue to maximize that. So, you know, we're very proud of the work he's putting down there. And like I said last week, right, he's not knocking at the door. He's kicking it, right? So we'll see what happens in the future.
One of those Belichickian fibs you told us recently, and we're fine with it. I Bill lied to me for years, so I don't take it too personally. I bitch on the radio for 20 minutes, and then I move on. But Crochet was awesome the other day. 12 strikeouts, 112 pitches, couple starts here with 100-plus pitches. As observers, should we now get ready to say, okay, there might be a game where he's going to be limited to 80 to 90 again? How does that play out moving forward for us as onlookers?
No. Obviously, the schedule will dictate what we do, and now we get an off day every week.
Right.
So I don't think we're going to push it to 112 every single start, but in the range of 95 to 100 full start, you know, he's a go unless he's not recovering well. And so far, so good. That's something we talk about it after the game that day, and for how frustrating it was for everybody that he went short. And we could have won that game, but maybe we don't have a shot to beat the Braves. You know, it's this balancing act, you know, and this for the benefit of the player, and he's feeling great, and he understood the Mets start, and he understood the Atlanta one. He really loved that one.
we did too.
From that game, Chris Sale is on the other side, and when he went out in the eighth, he looked at me, he's like, kind of, what? Like, yeah, this is where we at, kid. Things have changed since 2018.
The leadership of Garrett Crochet, is it just, I mean, the guy oozes confidence. Mm-hmm. You got to love that as a manager, right?
Yeah, and I don't know if you guys have been in the clubhouse, but the way he interacts with his teammates, I saw this in spring training, and we just traded for the guy. It's his first spring training with us. My office is very close to the Vita room. Whenever I walk by, it's Garrett with a reliever, Garrett with a left-handed reliever, talking about pitch sequences and grips and all that. You know, the guy, I think throughout his career, he's been prepared for this, to be the ace of a team like us, and I'm very happy that we have him.
And Alex, just sort of like a general baseball question as well, vis-a-vis like being a manager. Obviously, it has to have changed even so much since you first started managing the Red Sox back in 2018 as well, with so much more data and input from perhaps general managers, other coaches and whatnot. Like, do you prefer it this way, where there's input from so many different sources that lead to the decisions, or do you just like it the old fashioned way of like the baseball manager is the guy that's in charge of all those decisions?
Since 2018, we've been using medical information to dictate what we do with the rotation. We did it early in the season. We actually did it in September to prepare the guys for the cool things that we did in October. We downloaded guys, you know, deload guys in September. There was one with Porcello that he went four to get ready for October. So information has always been provided, and I use it, you know, for the benefit of the team.
Just to tie up one loose end as we send you out the door, we didn't see Christian Campbell at first base. Is that done with Romy back? Will he still take ground balls there?
He'll take grounders, but, you know, we'll go with Toro and with Romy. I think it's more about the playing of Abraham that dictate what we're going to do. Play him at second. Hopefully get him hot. That'll be good, you know. Will add some strength to the lineup, and if we do that, we're going to be okay.
All right, Alex, good luck tonight. Appreciate you joining us, as always.
Thank you, guys.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is.
Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, Swift Rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
Jones and Keith live at Fenway Park, taking you up to Red Sox and Angels. We're going to hang out with Joe Weil for some Red Sox pregame, 12:35, first pitch, 1:35. Here on your flagship station for the Boston Red Sox, WEEI. We've been talking a lot of Celtics on the show today. Off-season changes right around the corner for this team. And for more on that, we're joined here on Jones and Keefe by Robert Horry, friend of the show, seven-time NBA champ. He's brought to you courtesy of Bet Online. You can check out Bet Online for updated NBA Finals series and MVP odds, along with game-by-game lines and props. Robert Horry, welcome back to Jones and Keefe on WEEI.
Man, thanks for having me back, guys. Appreciate it.
Well, we want the insight. We like to pretend like we have real insight on the Celtics and their offseason and changes coming. You know, the big story here in Boston is new ownership. They're going to look to peel off some salary, especially with Jason Tatum hurt. What do you expect the Celtics to do this offseason, and what do you expect them to look like next year?
They're going to look totally different. You know, when I looked at that roster and you look at, you know, you got guys like Old Man Horford, you got Jrue Holiday, you got these guys who've been like a little long in the tooth. So you might get rid of Holiday because you got Peyton Pritchard who's been playing so well. You get rid of Al Horford because you have Luke Kornet who's playing so well. So those two guys can take a lot of money off of your cap. And then the thing is, what are you going to do with Jason, you know, tearing his Achilles and probably going to be out for the entire season next year? Do you say, okay, this is a way to like position ourselves to get a good pick in the draft? Or do we do what we're going to do? I would want to be the Celtics GM right now because there's some head scratching going on there. Like, what do you do with Porzingis, who's always hurt? You know, he's supposed to be that unicorn, but he hasn't been there for you. So it's going to be a lot of changes in the Celtics organization. But, you know, I think the main keys are going to be Brown, Pritchard, and Luke Kornet because those guys, you know, they play really great minutes. And of course, and Derek White. So it's going to be interesting what those guys do.
You know, they were about to lose the series to the Knicks even before Tatum got hurt, and they were trying to repeat as champions all year. We were sort of comparing them to the season before and wondering if they were going to do it. You've done it. You've won back-to-back early in your career. You won three in a row with the Lakers. Then you were on teams with the Spurs that would win every other year. So what do you think some of the big obstacles that this Celtics team ran into as they were trying to defend their title?
I think they fell in love with the three ball too much. You know, you had a success last season doing it, but did you really? You forget, Jaylen Brown is not a really efficient three-point shooter. He won MVP for you in the finals. And how did he do that? But just going to the hole and getting buckets. And that's the way this game has evolved and changed. Everybody wants to shoot threes. And you know the Celtics, you know, outside, I think Minnesota shot more threes than anybody. And you got to curtail your game. And I think you watch the way that Jason Tatum played. He's so good at getting to the basket, but yet you settle. I tell people all the time, when you shoot a lot of threes, I mean you don't want to work hard. because it's easy to get out in three wingers compared to like get to the hole and pull up for a jumper. That's a lot of work. You look at guys like, you know, Kobe Bryant did it, and then look at the MVP this year, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. He doesn't shoot a lot of threes. He manufactured points by getting to the basket, getting to the free throw line, and putting the defense on the heels. And you just can't just settle like the Celtics did this year. I think they had the fat cat syndrome more than anybody, and they just settled for a lot of threes because it was easy.
Okay, maybe you just answered it. I was going to ask you about who to blame for the play style, but the fat cat syndrome
coaching.
That set in with this team. So, coaching would be on the list. I think, you know, the whole organizational philosophy, it's league-wide with launching up all these threes. How would you combat that? I mean, is it strictly the coach? Is it a personnel thing? How do you combat the Celtics and the fat cat syndrome and the launching of the threes?
You started in training camp. You said, listen, guys, we're getting to the hole. You know, none of this selling for threes. If you're the hot guy, shoot all you can and make as many as you can. But just don't just pop a three because you're open. I think a lot of times, you know, it boils down to, okay, I have an open shot. Do you really? There's a reason you're open, you know. And sometimes guys shoot a lot of threes because it's easy, not just going to the basket. There's so many times I know I watch, I'm like, why are you shooting at Al Horford? You know, you're catching it at the top of your head and you're shooting it. It's clank, clank, clank. Then one game you have five and you think you're hot. And it's always amazing me how you shoot from three and you say, oh, I'm shooting 35% from three. That's awful. 35 only counts in baseball when you get that batting percentage. And to me, that's just god awful. And if you're not shooting over 43% from threes, you know, you shouldn't be shooting them unless you're wide open. And for me, I just think when you watch the way the Celtics play, they shot a lot of bad shots, a lot of bad shots. And that equates to fast break points, especially when you're playing the Knicks. They feast off that. You know, you shoot a bad three, they come down, grind out, get a two. You come down, shoot another bad three because you think I got to make up for the bad shot I just made, and it puts you in a hole. And the Celtics put themselves in a hole so many times during that Knicks series.
If you were playing today, how many threes a game would you take?
About 10.
I hate to be the bearer of bad news, Robert, but you were 34% for three from your career, but you'd let them fly?
Yeah, 34%, but you got to say, some games I take one, some games I take two. But now, if I'm going to take 10 a game, I'm going to make damn sure I make 50% of those. It's going to happen. Or not, I'm going to the hole. You know, I'm not one of these arrogant guys who it's going to eventually fall. It's going to fall when I see one go through, and then the confidence builds.
All right, I don't want to get you into trouble with anybody, but if you could have one guy for a series in their prime, would it be Olajuwon, Shaq, or Tim Duncan?
Shaq. If I could take the MVP Shaq, and, you know, that would take him. But if I got to take multiple years, I'm taking Dream. But if I got 1 year and I can take one particular player, it'd be 2000 Shaq because he was just so dominant. You know, if you think about the size, the strength, and his weight, his ability to move, you know, the Shaq you guys got, that was a third of the guy. So he was a third guy. That, you know, it was just simply amazing what he was able to do, man. So if he'd have been able to stay that Shaq for multiple years, he'd have probably been we wouldn't be talking about any other player but him as the most dominant and best player to play this game.
So this is probably a stupid question, but my fear is a player like Shaq from 2000 might not even have the same type of even a role, never mind the same type of role and impact in today's NBA. I mean, is that fair to say? Like, would Shaq have a role the way he played then in today's NBA?
So let me ask you this question. Who in the league right now could have guarded Shaq?
I mean,
no one.
His coaches would probably look, Robert,
like
I'm with you.
Joe Mazzulla wouldn't play him because he can't take threes.
Mazzulla would tell him to go stand in the corner. He'd be like, go launch from three.
And, you know, and if the owners were smart, you know what Azulu would be? He'd be watching it from the bench because he'd be fired. It's not about – this is what amazes me about coaches. Coaches come in, oh, this is my game plan. Do you have the personnel that fits your game plan? No, you coach the personnel that you have. You know, I think that's one of the problems that D'Antoni had when he was coaching Lakers. He had three really good big men, and he says, oh, I'm going to run this system. You don't have that people to run the system. You can't. You don't have what you had in Phoenix. And coaches need to be able to adjust and adapt and use the personnel. You think about it. You tell me right now, what player in the league that could guard prime Shaq? Nobody, because he's dunking on everybody. You know, think about what he did to Patrick Ewing, what he did to Hakeem Olajuwon. And these are great defensive players. David Robinson, Hall of Fame defensive players. They can barely stop him. You tell me what guy. Do you think Draymond Green could stop Shaq? He's only, what, 6'4"? No.
Robert, I don't know if I got some bad information on this, but I was told back at your Alabama days, Latrell Sprewell would get the better of you on one-on-one.
Well, you got a lot of bad information, dude. I don't know what you're talking about. Cause you forget, when Spree first got into the league, Spree couldn't shoot. It took a lot of hard work and dedication, and Don Nelson turned Spreewell into a way better player than he was in college. You know, if you go back and look at college, because nobody was shooting on that team. I'm the best player that ever came through Alabama.
I knew it was wrong. You were drafted much higher than he was, but we saw Sprewell pop up during the Knicks series where they had all the former Knicks kind of hanging around the baseline there.
No, don't get me wrong. Spree turned to a hell of a player. He's a better talent than me, but I'm a better winner than him.
That's true.
I mean,
that's undeniable.
One of the greatest winners the game's ever seen. 7-time champ Robert Horry. Brought to you courtesy of Bet Online. Check out Bet Online for updated NBA Finals series and MVP odds, along with game by game lines and props. OKC heavy favorite at Bet Online, -670. SGA heavy favorite to be Finals MVP, -550. Robert Horry, thanks for coming back on Jones and Keefe. We know you got a tight schedule today. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Man, I appreciate you guys. It's always fun to talk basketball with you guys.
Thank you, Robert. Appreciate it.
Robert Horry, thanks so much joining us here on Jones and Keefe.
The way it happened, everything went down. It sucks. This thing ain't freaking lasting.
I think I know more now.
I'll punch both of you in the face.
Yeah, it's just a completely different. There's no more hope.
When did I opt? I never opt.
Welcome back to Fenway Park. We're about to have the first WEEI Afternoons, WEEI Celebrity Death Match.
Come on, man.
Just an FYI, Will
like
Cumming.
It.
There's Ted Johnson is my tag team partner. So,
that's security.
Yep. God. That's my guy in the corner.
With four guys who just throw two weapons in the middle and go for it.
Yep, go for it.
So, I just opened the door. That's my first time meeting Ted in person. You give him a hug. People his age are not supposed to feel like that.
Yeah, no. So just remember, he's in my corner. We're teammates right here. You've got Lou. You can have Lou, so you guys can be teammates.
I don't think we're doing too well in this one.
Nope, I like my chances, but... So we've kind of had cooler heads prevailed. You did not F-bomb me or take a swing at me.
No.
In fact, we shook hands, and I think we have an
So what's going on with the feud?
By the way, radio hosts in Boston can right off.
Oh.
Who told me to F off?
I was there for that catch up.
I did not tell you. I did not.
Wait, was that not to him?
I'm a radio host in Boston.
Okay, right. But I mean, I wasn't, in that instance, I'm not talking about you.
Okay.
I've learned to just leave the whole thing alone. But
Did at me on Twitter, though, and
that's what threw you off.
Because that was for fun, right?
Okay,
that was soft.
But the at was followed by an F off, and I was like, Dan Ball's telling me, I think you're in a feud now. You're like RG3 and Ryan Clark. Now we're talking
Fleming
about wives.
Pissed off at you.
Oh, man.
We start talking about each other's wives and kids, and all of a sudden it's personal.
I'm just going to start doing balls and strikes, okay? This Anthony thing is crazy, isn't it, guys?
Because yes.
I mean, and I think what part of this is that Lou and I sat together after the sweep in Milwaukee, and both of us looked at each other and said, what are we doing? Like, it's time to do this. You got an off day, it's time. And I'll stand by that till the cows come home. And by the way, it's going to happen in the next week or so. And by the way, other changes that are dramatic are going to happen.
Ooh, what do you got?
Are you promising something again?
What's he doing?
Why is he doing?
And then when he doesn't, and when it doesn't come to fruition, and I criticize
and it's all
him,
my fault.
He F-bombs me.
There might be a little delay, but I Lou can corroborate this. Things are going to change here. They are. Might be 5, 7, 10 days behind schedule, but I think things are happening on a number of levels, and I think the way they play dictates how quickly those things happen, both good and bad.
Okay, because we've been teased a lot of things. The manager has lied to us a couple times. He tells us Crochet's going, miss complete game seven. Then he tells us.
So now we got off days. I heard him today. He got off days. I think you're good there.
You're right.
He Belichicked me. That is.
I think you're good.
Coaching
there.
White lie. So, Lou.
Yes.
Big changes. I got one guy on my left telling me big changes are coming.
Ooh.
And when I read reports out of San Diego, they're interested in Jaren Duran. Would trading Jaren Duran qualify as a big change? And do you think that could happen?
Do you guys know what agita is, like an Italian thing, like heartburn?
Okay.
I get that.
I don't think that's just Italian.
Well, this is the thing. Yeah, like just thinking about
trading Jaren Duran. Like, everybody's like, yo, you got to move on. You got to make room for Roman Anthony.
Yes.
If you move Jaren Duran,
yeah.
Like, listen, yeah. This is my thing, okay? In the beginning of camp, like, how many of these young kids going to make the roster out of spring training? I said, hopefully none, yeah. Okay, because they're young, and I want to get some guys that have been in this league for a while, and you want to compete for a division. You want to make the postseason. You've already got three rookies up here. You're going to have a fourth here soon, and it's going to be really hard to win every single day with full rookies in your lineup. And if you move on from Jaren Duran, he's the one player on this roster that is sort of maturing and starting to get to the point where he is in his prime. He is an electric player, and to move on from that and to just get younger irritates me. You are not going to get any help for the big leagues if you move him to San Diego. Mm. You are going to get a double-A arm. You're going to get a single-A shortstop.
You got a catcher, I saw.
Great, you can get a catcher. That is fantastic. You got Narvaez here right now. I am starting to be in the business of helping your big league team, mm-hmm. not moving on to some of your electric players. It's Duran and Devers on top of the order, and everybody else right now is just rotating through who's hot, who's not. Those two are your constants. You cannot move on from Jaren Duran, because if you do, I don't know what you are. I don't know what you are for the next 3 years.
Do you want to follow up on that, Will, or do you? I got it. Somewhere
you have
on
more
my
anger.
You know, I am curious though. Do you think people might be going out there, because it feels like the profile of this team when the season started was one thing, and it was a veteran team with some young guys sprinkled in. Mm. Now it feels like it's the profile of this team is very different now, mm-hmm. With the key injuries that they've had to Bregman and Casas. Now it feels like a young team, and now, okay, that's where this stuff, I think, Jaren Duran, hey, trade them, get younger. And it just feels like the season has flipped on what the profile of it is.
The reality is, and I said this before Bregman went down, I had a little walk, it was always a young team sprinkled in with a couple
okay.
of veterans.
Gotcha.
I mean, you literally had a rookie at catcher, a rookie at second, a second-year player at first base. You had Story and Bregman. You had an outfield of Duran starting to come into it with Rafael and Abreu. You know, you had set up guys like Slayton, who was a Rule 5-year plus, Weissert, Whitlock. Like, you had youth all over the place. And I said it before Bregman went down. And when Bregman went down, you bring up Meyer, this league – you know, the last time this Red Sox team introduced four or five young prospects, it was 14, and they finished in last place 2 years in a row. Hmm. Until they went out and started trading for some veterans and signing some veterans, and then you started making the playoffs and eventually won a World Series in 18, when Mookie Betts and Xander Bogaerts and Jackie Bradley and E-Rod and Vasquez were on year 4 and 5. Like, it takes a while to win in this league. Duran is on that path. Year 4, basically, now. Like, let that continue. It just, they got real young. They've always really been young.
Angry Lou Merlone and angry Will Fleming joining us here on WEEI Afternoons. So, I said to Ted last week, I do think we underestimated how young this team was going to be.
I did.
We kind of got caught up in the emotion of they're going to be good. Is there an opportunity here? Ted totally poo-pooed this, but I'll ask both of you. Is there an opportunity here? Because you look at the veterans and you're like, well, Story was struggling for so long, tough to lead when you're Ref Snyder. Are you really a leader? Devers, I don't know if he's a natural leader. Is there an opportunity for these guys, hell, the big three, when Roman Anthony gets here, to kind of pull all the young players together and say, F it, we don't know what we don't know. We can lead this team out of this malaise that's been early season. And Will Fleming's eyes just exploded and tell me the answer, but go ahead, speak it.
No, the answer to that is no. Like, you just are around enough big league clubhouses and young guys just cannot carry a team like that. Could it be fun and exciting in a different way? Yeah, but I mean, I think a lot of the struggles of this team this year go back to youth. They just, look, this is a industry-wide problem. Nobody in the minor leagues learns how to win games. We are tracking exit velocity and launch angle and all of these things so that you get kids up here to manipulate's the wrong word, but you want controllable young assets while they're cheap,
right.
And you go to try to open this window and win while they're here on, you know, lesser contracts or team-friendly extensions, whatever it is. Nobody learns how to play the game down there. Nobody. They don't move runners over. They don't have situational hitting. And I think the most important thing is we don't push pitchers past their comfort level in the minor leagues because we're so worried about injury. I just think what we're missing from this conversation is that the young hitters on this club are not the problem. I mean, yeah, the offense has been disappointing at times. The pitching is the problem. And when all of us came out of spring training thinking this was going to be a good year, it's because you had some veteran pitchers you felt really good about. Now, Buehler gets hurt. That's part of it. But was not good at all. He's now hurt. Bayo has regressed in a major way. And so, you know, Bayo is a guy like Lou's talking about with Duran, like third, fourth, full year. That's what you felt like you could lean on all 5 days in the rotation. Without that, then everything is so much more sort of exaggerated.
Let me ask you guys, because I listen to you guys all the time. In the pitching, you mentioned the pitching, you know, Will, is – and Lou, I hear you talk about this all the time. It's like – you know, why not a fastball there? You know, in the Red Sox, we looked at, I mean, they're I think dead last in throwing fastballs.
21%.
How about that research from Dan Ball?
He's the best.
Pulling it out.
He's the best. And I can tell it frustrates you guys because there's a predictability in that. It's just like when we scout the opponent football. So if you know a breaking ball's coming, obviously it's easier to hit. Just your thoughts on the game plan when it comes to pitching and why not more fastballs?
Well, there was a fastball thrown to Trout last night that I like to have back.
Yeah, it's over there somewhere.
Right. No, I agree, and I think, you know, we're both on the same page. And I heard Cora this morning saying, do we have good ones, right? Because Crochet uses his. Yeah. Chapman obviously uses his. But, you know, you talk about getting deep in the game. I've never known what you would call a horse, right? A guy that goes deep, a guy that's 200 innings, the guy you can rely on, that tries to slide and curve and change up his way to seven innings. I've never come across that guy. Like, every horse that I know, fastball outer half, fastball strike one, fastball strike two. Hey, let's get this at-bat over with. You know, sinker down and in, ground ball, you know, attacks with the fastball. But to ask a guy to go seven innings trying to throw sliders and changeups and curveballs, I think is just too hard. I don't think you throw enough strikes with them. And because of it, you're getting 4 2/3. The pitch counts are going up, five innings. I'd like to see some of these guys. I swear to God, that Schwellenbach start down in Atlanta, I had a tear in my eye for their other pitcher.
I think I heard, like, you guys say in the first inning he was locked in.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I would give up everybody in our organization just to watch him every day.
It's so true.
That's probably not true.
Well, that's
but
not
still.
True.
But it was
Paul
fun.
Skeens, maybe. But I think what's interesting about it is that last year, like right around June, it started to happen where we would be on the road and it would be first pitch, hanging slider, gone. In a way that major league hitters, I mean, if you throw a terrible breaking ball, it's going to go a long way. But that was our first sort of like red flag moment of like, wait a minute. Like, it is obvious. And then you start talking to people around the game and they say, the book is out on these guys. Like, we are sitting and looking for spin. What's different about it this year is it's a lot of O2s. Like, you get O2 and then it's a breaking ball that's non-competitive. It's another breaking ball that's not competitive. It's a foul ball and a fastball, and then here comes the hanging slider that goes forever. And so, look, I don't want to act like I'm some pitching expert and guru. I'm not. But you watch the patterns of these pitchers and some of the sequences that have killed this team this year, and a lot of times you're just thinking through the game and sort of, for lack of a better word, I'm not trying to be too angry, like an interesting pitch choice results in a really bad result.
So Lou Maloney wants to throw fastballs, and Will Fleming and Will Middlebrooks and everybody I hear wants to throw fastballs, and they're not throwing fastballs. So that brings us to what I feel like is the overwhelming theme of this team when we're analyzing it, is like, how's the communication in this team between Breslow and Cora and Andrew Bailey and that relationship and Veritek? We asked Cora about earlier. He brings him into sort of the game planning and the pitch sequences.
Are they all on the same page?
Are they on the same page? Who's making – is this just straight Andrew Bailey and Breslow?
Yeah,
how do you change it?
I don't know about that stuff. I knew that they focus on what's your best pitch, you know. And I heard Breslow even the other day, like, you know, we want our guys to go out there, and Bailey said the same thing, you know, to throw their best pitch more often. Well, if I know that, and you know that, then as a hitter, I'm going to be like, you know, and a lot of times guys do go to their best pitch. And sometimes you can look for their best pitch, and they're going to get you because it's that good, you know. But I feel like we've, you know, and listen, I'm not wanting everybody to go out here and throw fastballs all day. Like, Bayo's got a good one. He should be able to use it because some guys can't, you know, and I understand it. They don't have that swing and miss fastball. You would just, you know. Sometimes I see 0-2 fastballs down the middle taken for strike three on opposing teams. And I'm like, well, there you go.
Right.
But don't you know, because they're looking for something else. You can tell by the reaction of a hitter what they're doing. They're sitting soft. Because in general, I would say the book is out a little bit. That's all. And it has been.
Well, it's been out since last May, if you run some of the numbers.
I think another part of this, too, is that in the modern game, and certainly in this organization, it's about like creating new breaking balls, right? That you're trying for the first time. I mean, how many of these Red Sox pitchers come in with like a sweeper they found in the bullpen two weeks ago? And I, like, if you're facing Ronald Acuna with a pitch you've thrown 20 times in your professional life, I just think all these things are sort of related.
I'm curious, what is there anything that surprised you this year? I mean, is some of the play of Narvaez or anybody, is there anything that's jumping, you know, in a positive way, that's been a surprise or
Narvaez.
Positives here.
Narvaez.
Yeah, well, you know, but awesome. Guys, it's always negative. Let's talk
about Narvaez. I mean, he's been unbelievable, not just behind the plate, but for a rookie to come in and take over a staff and to do what he's doing defensively. And for like the first month, he was hitting 200. Cora kept saying there's more there offensively. Yeah. And May, he went absolutely nuts. Now, I don't expect him to hit 350 every month, you know, but I think he's a good player.
He's a better defender than people thought, right?
Yeah, you know, he's fantastic. I think he came up knowing that he was going to be a good defender. But I just feel like what you've seen, just the overall picture of a rookie coming in and controlling 13 guys on a staff has been impressive. The other one is just the best version of Devers I've ever seen in my life. You know, just like, I always wonder if you could take an aggression away from an aggressive hitter, a bad ball hitter, and boy, if he could just be a little more patient early in counts and get in the hitter's counts, what could he be? And that's what we're seeing. You know, he's taking pitches, he's drawing walks. It's the best version I think we've ever seen of him.
I agree with that. I think I was not ready for how good Chapman was going to be. Like, they've made major changes with him. This 98-99, then a warm-up to 101, he has, to me, been absolutely fabulous. I can't believe what a great closer he's been. And then I was surprised. I mean, we watched Bregman from afar, but what this dude does to this room and to this group is off the charts. And so in a lot of ways, like, that's the whole point of the next, what is it, 5 weeks? Survive until he comes back. I mean, that's, it sort of coincides with a trade deadline. Try to stay in it, because they are not nearly the same team when he's not in there. He just impacts every corner of the whole thing.
So I know you guys are P1 listeners and you follow, I know you follow on Twitter because you're at me when you want to yell at me.
Oh,
so we put out a poll most days on at WEEIF.
What do we got today?
Today I went with, do you believe the Red Sox can turn things around enough at least to play meaningful baseball beyond July? You want to know what the results are right now?
I can guess.
Yeah.
64% no. 36% yes.
So you're telling me there's a chance?
Are you you're the guy who knows more. You just told me in your little open here that you know more. You know more things. Is this team going to be playing meaningful baseball in August, or are we going to be turning our attention to the Patriots in training camp?
I think to Will's point, you got about a month right now. You got to try to figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, and I know that trades aren't possible right now, but dealing from a position of depth, you know, I think you got to try to get some help. I think you need a bullpen arm to make sure you try to hold on to some of these games. And then when Slayton comes back, you're absolutely loaded. But I think the next month is going to be extremely difficult, because you're asking young players to figure it out really, really quickly. You know, and Marcelo Meyer is going, just, it's just like all the kids that we saw before. You know, you hope that these guys in 4 or 5 years turn into all-stars and MVPs. And you know, I still think they're going to be. They're extremely talented. But you don't see 99 with a split like in Worcester too often. You know what I mean? So I think there's a big adjustment period for guys coming up. And I think this next month, you're going to need some big performances from some guys. And that's why I keep talking about Trevor Story. Like, and he saw it the other day in Atlanta. Like, to me, he's got to get hot. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got to get hot. And whether you think he can or can't, whatever. And if you can survive it and get Bregman back here, meaningful. Yeah. I mean, are they going to do damage in the playoffs? I feel like they're very young. I'll enjoy watching them play. But I think they're young.
Will, you're the eternal optimist. Well, you were the eternal optimist before the season started. As of Friday, you were F-bombing me and cranky and angry and yelling at the world. So optimism still in there somewhere?
There is. Now, I just do want to clarify this. Like, over the last, like, 3 years, I've developed this alter ego on that podcast.
Here's another homer.
tremendous last night. Maybe your best inning ever. Mike Trout hasn't been good. Oh, he is now, or whatever you said. Like, the reaction.
One homer in 34 games.
That was your home run call?
Oh, there's another. Yep.
Yeah.
Tremendous.
By the way, that ball was, I mean, that was awesome to watch, right? If you're 10 games over, it's like, oh my God, right. Mike Trout's homered at Fenway this
week. Not if you're Richard Fitz.
No, not.
Well, you
so
saw
much.
History. This place has been around a long time, and you saw history. Never been a first inning like that. Better or worse.
I'm optimistic, big picture, in terms of the young guys growing and doing all this stuff, but I can't lie, and I try never to lie on the air in the games. I right now this thing feels like it could go in two totally different directions. It really does. You watch the games. Our fans don't want BS. I can't say I feel really confident they're about to win 15 of 20. every night they prove to you that they just are not doing that right now. And with the pitching injuries and all this stuff, we'll see. Watching Crochet every fifth day is awesome. Maybe we get Anthony and there's a little fun and a little juice there. But until they consistently win these one-run games, it's hard to think that there's going to be some big correction.
And before we let you go, just so there's no confusion, let's get a real clean, tight prediction of what you're promising me the next week or two. Roman Anthony will be here. Correct?
I think so. I do.
And what else is happening?
You're not guaranteeing
it. Big things are happening.
I'm not guaranteeing it.
Not guaranteeing it.
Second one, I can't say.
But there's big things coming.
I think. I think Roman has to. It's just a matter of time now. And like, that's the whole optimism part. It'll be fun. I enjoy watching Campbell even go through struggles.
Yep.
To see how he kind of changes and adapts. Same thing with Marcelo. Same thing with Roman and Narvaez. Like, I enjoy seeing if Bayo can figure it out here tonight. So I enjoy all of that. But if you're going to really stay in this thing, you're going to need some kids to figure it out. You're going to need guys like Story and Abreu to kind of pick it up. Yep. And you're going to need everybody as a group.
And Lou, real quick, that juices you guys. When a Roman Anthony comes up, young kid, it's like, okay, let's see what it can give a little bit of life to the whole
ball. Same thing with Marcelo. Yeah. You know, I mean, I think there is some life, but then reality kind of sets in. This league is really hard, right? So now it's like, let's watch the journey and let's see these guys. Because, you know, Xander Bogaerts came up. He wasn't himself right away. And all these other guys. So let's see where it goes.
You know what juices me? Ted's six bracelets, his camouflage flip-flops. I mean, that is some major action over there.
I love it. I never met Will. We go in with a hug and hugged it up. It was awesome, man. I looked up.
You were my human peace treaty. He saw you and he just melted. He's like, nope. The feud is out the window. If he's on his side, we're done here. No more F-bombs. I apologize.
I will say, you know, what's crazy is, like, I hear those highlights back, and I heard the people were making fun of me for the oink oink with Crochet the other day. Like,
I love that. Lou's
been with me a lot of times. I cannot hide my emotions.
And you should.
I can't.
Stop. So you two, in my opinion, are the most passionate.
Oink!
Passionate. That's the example.
I missed that.
You two are the most passionate voices around the Red Sox right now, and people appreciate that, good or bad. They'll also appreciate if they turn these things around and you guys are, you know, enjoying it and celebrating in the booth when Roman Anthony hits a 454-foot home run here at Fenway Park. Mm-hmm. So
I promise you we will.
I hope. Oh, I'm looking, and I'm looking forward to the other thing that you won't tell.
I know you are.
It's always what they don't tell you that's the real good thing. Lou Maloney, Will Fleming, thanks for joining us
here
on the WEEI Afternoons. Good game tonight. Hopefully, maybe, could be. We'll see.
F you.
See ya.
By the way, radio hosts in Boston can right off.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Wherever summer takes you, save on your journey with True North convenience stores and Red Bull. Enjoy the new Red Bull Summer Edition, White Peach, a perfect balance of bold, sweet, and refreshing. Right now, grab any 3 8-ounce Red Bull for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon, just in time for your next road trip. Save big all summer long with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. True North convenience stores, fast, friendly, clean.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com.
We've done your homework.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.